And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm Grace.
I am David.
All right, and today we have not one, but two special guests. First, in order of who is appearing on my TeamSpeak page, I will introduce Andy, otherwise known as the First Time Trekker on Twitter.
Hi!
Hey.
Welcome back, Andy. This is your second time appearing on the show.
Yes, I pestered you guys until you let me back on.
We were just looking for an opportunity. And now our second guest has also been on the show before. This is Sue from the Anomaly Supplemental Podcast.
Hello.
And the reason that I brought both of you on is because you both happen to be going through TOS for the first time. And although you're coming at it from kind of different directions, I would love to hear just a recap from it. Andy, what brought you to watch TOS for the first time?
Well, I'm doing a live tweet of all of Star Trek. And when I started with Next Generation, and it turns out, hey, maybe that wasn't the best place to start. So I went back to original series. So I'm going to be watching the original series and live tweeting all of that, and then moving on to the other Star Trek series and movies. I watched it all.
And as the Twitter account handle ID name thingy suggests, you're live tweeting it, but you're live tweeting it as you're seeing it for the very first time. And it's awesome because it's like, you know, honest reactions, there's jokes, there's pictures, and it's just somebody who's watched Star Trek over and over and over. It's fun to see it through new eyes, and you say no spoilers, so a lot of people are like, I can't wait till she sees this thing, but I can't say what it is.
It's true. There's a big amount of vicarious fun with it. It's like watching someone watch your favorite show for the first time.
And make fun of it.
That's actually exactly what it is, yeah.
That's pretty much what we do here. And Sue, you have seen, as I understand it, you've seen like everything but TOS in Star Trek, right?
That would be correct. Everything but TOS and TAS, if we can call it that, the animated series.
TAS.
And TOS. TOS.
And so you you're actually blogging your way through it, aren't you? You've been doing that on the Anomaly website.
Yes, I am, you know, however many episodes I get through in a week go up on usually Sunday night, and just with a little bit of a summary and then my own commentary, which usually ends up with me being annoyed.
Yeah, I'm noticing that's a bit of a running theme, which I think is going to be a great topic for conversation. But before we get into that, there is one little bit of bookkeeping that I want to take care of, which is to remind everyone that our friend Jara Hodge, the Trekkie feminist, is still doing her push to have everyone to sign a petition to get StarTrek.com to actually moderate their Facebook comments. We talked about this last week, but it's basically the same situation. Right now, the comments are completely unmoderated, and they descend into sexism and racism and homophobia. It's just a very unpleasant environment.
And this is truly a labor of love on her part. She is doing it just so that we can feel like this is a better place for us as a Trekkie community. And she really deserves all our respect and all our snaps for this.
So we will put the link to that in the chat room, and it will also be in the show notes. You can also find it on the TrekkieFeminist.tumblr.com, which is where her blog is. So I would advise you, if you have not already signed it, to please do that, because that is the way that those comments work now is not in the... It is not the legacy that Star Trek deserves, you know, with Star Trek's message of acceptance, at least most of the time. We can do better than that.
And honestly, it's not the homepage fodder that we want.
Yeah, that too. Now, back to the main topic of discussion for today. Now, before we actually went on the air, you guys, like Grace and Sue and Andy, all three of you were having a very interesting conversation about the episode Friday's Child. Because
Yes, we were.
Which is in season two, and both Andy and Sue have been making their way through season two. Sometimes it's a bit of a chore, but I would really love to hear what you guys were saying about Friday's Child and like why it really struck a nerve with you.
Well, there's really just one scene in particular that's especially bad, and that's the one where McCoy is attempting to examine in a medical capacity. Is there Elian? I think is how they pronounce
Elian,
it.
Yes. Or we just call her Julie Newmar.
Yeah, Julie Newmar. So he's trying to examine her because she's pregnant and, you know, wandering through the desert, and she probably needs medical attention. And she keeps slapping his hand away and telling him not to touch her. And he ignores that. And then eventually he slaps her in the face And then after that, everything's cool. Problem solved.
Taming of the Shrew style, really.
Yeah, and then after that, she's like, only McCoy can touch her. As if he's proven his manhood somehow by hitting her in the face.
But at the same time, it feels like everyone is still kind of going out of their way to, like, touch her. And it's like, don't touch me. Don't touch me. How many times does she have to say, don't touch me?
Yeah. Well, and not only that, once McCoy relays this story to Kirk, Kirk says, you know, well, I didn't think that was in a medical book. And McCoy responds, well, it's in mine now. So anytime that, you know, a woman is refusing you in any way, just hit her. That's cool.
And after that, she'll be totally cool with it.
Yay, 60s.
I wonder how they figure their dosage for the slaps. Like, is it, you know, in this case, one slap worked, and another time, two?
30 cc's of backhand.
Exactly.
Yeah, somehow I can't imagine that being in the official Starfleet medical handbook.
Well, it's just especially jarring because, you know, we do respect McCoy as a doctor for the most part, and part of the pleasure of his character is his gruff bedside manner. So to use this as a way to kind of add to his, oh, that's just McCoy, you know, he's gruff and straightforward, but it's not the same thing at all. There's a difference between making, like, a sarcastic joke while, you know, nice, funny kind of line when he actually assaults someone and it's portrayed as, I don't know, funny? Necessary?
Like, it was definitely supposed to be a case of, like, McCoy not wanting to deal with any of this, like, cultural, like, differences stuff. He was just like, I'm going to get done when I need to get done. But they really didn't take into account that this is, you know, committing violence on a patient because she doesn't want to be touched. And that's just like, okay, it's hard to look at anything else when you do that.
And we have the right to refuse medical treatment. You can always refuse medical treatment. I can't imagine that right going away in the 23rd century. But leaving aside that she is pregnant and may have a medical condition, whatever you want to call it, how many times does she say she doesn't want to be touched? It shouldn't
at least
be
10.
More than once.
Yeah, it's really insane. It's just, and it got all of us thinking about how many times we've had someone just kind of, you know, touch us without our permission and be like, and just not get it that we don't want to be touched. We don't know you. Stop doing that.
It kind of goes to a larger problem of female bodies being entitled. Like, people feel entitled to touch them.
Yeah,
public domain. And because she's pregnant, it actually adds another layer of that. Society
because
in general,
it's true, yeah.
Feels like they have a right to decide when you're going to get pregnant, how you're going to get pregnant, what you should do after you've gotten pregnant. I mean, there's a lot of extra issues there.
I can't count how many pregnant women I've known who will just have people, strangers, like, come up and touch their bellies and them just be like, what are you doing? Who are you? Stop touching me.
I have friends who, when they have been pregnant, have shirts that say, don't touch, like right over the baby bump.
And just to
because it gets necessary. Yeah. People feel like, oh, baby, I get to get all up in that business. It's like,
strangers
no, there's
think
a person
they can
here
touch
still.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one reason why street harassment is such a thing, because when you're a woman and you're out in public, it's like there's a line there that people cross all the time for women that they would not cross for men at all. And it's as mundane as talking to you when you don't want to be talked to, or as terrible as touching you, even in a sexual way, when you don't want to be touched.
And
people do that all the time.
Yeah. Who here has had someone, like, bodily try to move them in,
yes,
like, a public space who you've never met or seen before and just be like,
yep,
excuse you?
Yep.
What is... Well, I am not a roadblock.
I live in a big city on public transportation. The number of times I have been touched on public transportation, both just kind of a brush and an actual grope, I've lost count at this point.
I had a stalker for a while, actually, on the subway, which was pretty terrifying. And I started walking to a farther train so I wouldn't have to deal with this guy anymore. I am no longer living in that neighborhood. But yeah, every day I either have to reassert myself when the male leg spread happens on the subway, or tell someone not to touch me.
Oh, God, every time.
Or literally every day, twice a day, to and from work. It's ridiculous.
What's all the time when you spread back and they're like, what is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're the one who initiates your leg touching theirs, they freak out and they don't know what to do.
Well, because men have the right to space and you do not. That simple.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. So I feel like you guys are probably like superheroes because you're describing all this and I'm sitting like, man, I kind of start to lose it if there's too much traffic in the morning. So, you know,
male privilege is so great to have.
I'm not going to say that I understand what's happened to you because, like, clearly I don't. But I, you know, I do apologize on behalf of everyone who is like me.
Yeah, I've been pet. Like, actual had my hair pet. Like, I'm a dog. I've been spit on and groped multiple times. Once I had a guy where I was sitting on the inside seat and he sat in the outside seat, turned his entire body so I could not get away, and then just really aggressively talked to me for like 5 stops and there was nowhere for me to go.
Yeah, I've had that too. And I was like 14 at the time, so.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, that starts at like 11. Just before puberty is really when you start to see the difference there.
So even if you're male looking at this episode and thinking, what's the big deal? That's the big deal, is that every single woman you know has been through something like that. And it's showing you that not having respect for a woman's wishes and what she wants for her own body is not a big deal. Just hit her. It's fine.
Well, and what all three of you are describing, I don't think is a modern phenomenon. So that would have been the same going back to the 60s. And so for Star Trek to portray this scene, I think it was just a bad, I don't know if it was played for humor. I remember the scene. I don't remember the actual nuance of if it was played for humor or if people just took it that way. But at that time, it's a perfect time for McCoy to use his both gruffness and his southern charm to like just say, hey, listen, you know, you need medical attention. I'm a doctor. I'm going to give, you know, talk it to her to where he's reasoning to her and she'll be like, okay, you could do your examination. Instead of just like resort to violence. I mean, that just doesn't, because then it becomes like you said, and in the episode shows, then only McCoy can touch her. And it almost becomes like, is she like submissive now? Or it's like, it was just weird.
Did he force his respect on her or what?
She like weirdly falls in love with him after that. It's
and
very
then he's her baby messed daddy. Up.
She belongs to him after that is how it's portrayed, is like he won the right to touch her.
And
like he showed his dominance and she respected the dominance and now it, and they have a similar scene the very beginning of that episode where she serves them tea or something, and then if Kirk had drank her tea or something, then he had to fight her male relative.
What an innuendo.
Yeah, so clearly there's like in this society there's a lot of rules about how you claim women. And it seems
and
to be very...
And then her, like, brothers and family come in and say they're unimpressed that he didn't try.
Exactly. It's just like kind of, a constant fight for male dominance. And when you're the dominant alpha male, well, then you get your woman as your prize.
And part of what really weirded me out about this episode is you see in the opening credits, this was written by DC Fontana. This was written by a woman. But you really got to wonder how much of it was... changed around. Like, just a cursory Google of this episode, I got information that the ending was changed, a lot was changed. You gotta wonder how much and what DC Fontana thought about it.
She has said in numerous interviews that a lot of her TOS episodes, even though she got the on-screen credit, were drastically changed from what she actually wrote.
Yeah, that's just a kind of invasive touching of a different kind, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, that,
I mean,
that
it's...
didn't just stop with TOS. Didn't that continue into TNG? Like, as I recall, she has a credit for writing Encounter at Farpoint, but, like, basically Gene was like, this episode has to have Q in it, and she was like, the episode that I wrote does not have Q, and they kind of tried to graft Q onto the story with the actual base.
And you can really feel it. You can feel it in the episode that there's been some cutting and pasting going on.
Well, I mean, it's not impossible that a woman would write this. I mean, there's a lot of ingrained internalized misogyny, but I
have a
feeling that a woman would not write this. It doesn't feel like something that a woman would write, but that's not to say it's impossible.
At the very least, it really feels like they're not taking into account the woman's point of view. I don't remember the name of the character. I'm sorry. But it's like they're written. This is written entirely Elliot. From the. Say what?
Her name is Elian.
Elian.
Like that.
Yeah. It feels
Eliana?
Like this is,
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't take her point of view into account like at all. It's sort of written completely from the point of view of our three male protagonists, and you actually kind of get the same thing in Amok Time. Like if you recall, that's the one where Spock has his whole Ponfar business. Where you have this is the first time, to
always
be fair.
He's just pawn far and left and right, though.
This is true. But it's, like, T'Pring is kind of vilified in that episode for being like, you're so sneaky and you arranged this whole fight. But, like, they kind of gloss over the fact that that was her only way out of this forced marriage that she didn't want. And I've always felt sympathy for that character, that I think they could have gone more into why she was doing what she did.
I think it's kind of awesome that she did what she did. She looked into the system and she figured out how to manipulate it to get what she wanted. Good for her.
Which, if you're a woman in that kind of system, is kind of your only option, isn't it?
It still has that weird men fighting over you and then you are a prize thing.
Ick.
Well, it's
yeah, but it has been romanticized, right? That's the basis of, say, the Twilight love triangle. I mean, it's been romanticized, and this is why I was saying women can write this sort of thing all the time, because we're taught that male attention is what, you know, we should be wanting. And when you have two men fighting over you, it's like a...
It's like you've won the jackpot.
Yeah, exactly. It's a form of...
You are worth fighting over.
Exactly.
We're conditioned to want men to fight over us.
Yes.
Which is messed up.
And with T'Pring, it's not like that's an ideal scenario for her, but it is it's what's within her capabilities, right? Because she set it up very carefully so that no matter who wins, she can get what she wants, which is to not marry Spock and theoretically to be with this other guy. I don't remember what his name was, like Shran or something.
Creepy eyes.
You know, the guy who seemed kind of out of it for most of the episode.
Yeah, that's why I call him Creepy Eyes.
That's how she likes him. Out of it.
And you kind of have a similar... I'm noticing a theme here, you know, in case anyone who thought this was going to be just light conversation about a campy TOS show. There's a similar theme going on in Metamorphosis, which is the episode with where they first introduce the character of Cochran.
Do you really want to talk to me about that episode?
That's the worst.
Sue, I brought you on specifically to talk to you about this episode.
He has opened the floodgates.
Metamorphosis. Oh, goodness. No matter what, whether you're a gas cloud or a woman high up in Starfleet, obviously the most important thing is that you get a man.
Because really, no matter how hard you work at your job or any other aspect of life, that's what you're looking for.
It's not fulfilling. Not without a love interest.
No, of course not. Years and years of rom-coms have taught me that, too. Ryan lie to me?
Did anyone else think it was super shady that the cloud was like, I have merged with this woman, and now she wants to do everything I wanted to do? It's like, are you sure you merged with her? I think you're just mind-controlling her, cloud.
That doesn't sound like a merge to me. That sounds like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Not an equal opportunity merge, to be sure.
Well, that's why they have the scene with her where she talks about how, as much as she has done in Starfleet, she regrets her wasted life because she has not had a family or love or whatever. So we can remind everyone that that's the most fulfilling part of a woman's life.
And it's like, you could have done that in a way that wouldn't have been so troubling, because like, it's not like it's unreasonable to have a character who, when they're dying or what have you, regrets that they spent too much time at work, right? Like, that's not an unreasonable story, but the way they have it with her is clearly like, I did not do this particular thing, and that's what I must want because of being female.
They have that conversation at one point. I do not remember the episode where there is female Starfleet officer and McCoy says something like, she's a woman, she's all woman, and then talks about how as soon as she finds a husband, she'll drop out of Starfleet.
Well, isn't that charming?
Yeah.
Yeah, super charming.
And I mean, if nothing else, that's definitely something that I at least I think you would probably not say it as blatantly on if you made that episode today, but it's still like very problematic. Now, Sue, your post on this episode was fantastic. I would really like to if you could elucidate for us your thought process as you were watching Metamorphosis.
My thought process. Well,
or like what was it like for you watching this episode? Because like I said, I really liked your blog post on it.
My brain first lit on fire. And then my head exploded, and then I threw things at my television set. It starts out
and then you
great,
wrote a blog
right?
post.
Right, and then I ranted on a blog post is what I did. But it starts out great. Like, you've actually got this commissioner who's a woman who's trying to stop a war, and she's not taking anybody's crap on that shuttlecraft, and she's angry at Starfleet, and, like, she's accurate. At the opening of this episode, right? But they get on this planet, and this energy being, like, they can't figure out what it is. Okay, fine, stuff from Cochrane, whatever. But then they find out that this energy being is female, and for some reason, they say that changes everything. One, because I guess a woman can't be a zookeeper and a scientist and be interested in something scientifically, so... Like a male would, because if a male is holding Cochrane hostage, it's because he's curious about humans. And then, which leads to point two, if a woman is holding him captive, clearly she's just in love with him. But then, right?
Like they do.
Then, the thing that, like, I think might have been close to the last straw was when Kirk says that the idea of male and female are universal constants.
Yeah, I flipped out on that line, too.
No.
The gender binary is not universal. Nope. The gender binary is not even a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just infuriating.
Yeah, no.
Not in nature and not even in the Star Trek universe.
What was your hashtag for that? On
the
Twitters?
No. Oh, yeah. No. Nope. No. Like three
hashtag
times.
So very wrong.
Wrong.
Right, so like
incorrect.
The Andorians, which they haven't even, you know, really gotten into yet, have four genders. And they need four genders in order to create offspring. Four. But okay, you want to argue maybe let's play devil's advocate and say they haven't invented that scheme yet? What about nature on our planet?
Hashtag like, biology class?
Right?
Asexual reproduction.
And then, you know, by the time that the commissioner says that nobody ever loved her and therefore her life where she was stopping wars on planets was worthless,
oh,
I was
God.
Just done. Like, I needed to step away from Star Trek for a good couple of days. And, like, really, when I started up again the next week, I didn't want to. I was like, I'm still kind of angry about this.
I hear you.
Yeah, that rage sticks with you.
There was so much wrong in this episode. There was also the line right at the very beginning when Cochrane sees Commissioner Hedford for the first time and he calls her food to a starving man. Oh, I knew things were going to be bad right
really
from that
hungry,
moment.
Okay?
He stares right at her and is like, yeah, food for a starving man. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and all the rest of you too.
Long pig, I think that's called, is the traditional name of that dish.
Ugh.
Now,
well,
you first, David.
Well, I was just obviously there's still season three to go, but you've gotten far all through season one. You're both into season two, and that's kind of what we're talking about. Some like you know some of the sexism, misogyny, the just the you know wrong, bad thinking, or you know flawed concepts of you know life of you know men and women and everything. But so that. There's also the really like silly campy episodes. There's the really good episodes, but that is a thing that I wondered about, especially watching and knowing the first time that Andy was going to go through the whole TOS is like it's so diverse in terms of there's just okay sci-fi type episodes. There's the like really good humanity, you know, examining the human condition episode. Then there's the bad ones. Has that been something that surprised you, or is that something that you knew about, or just the like all across the board, the how TOS can be, that like there's so good ones, there's they're just the silly fun ones, but then there's like the really horrible, you know, bad racism and sexism type, you know, going on.
I kind of braced myself for a lot of that because so many of my followers were warning me of it. Because I had already gone through the Next Generation, and so people already knew kind of the perspective that I was going to be bringing to the original series. And I basically got a lot of tweets that were like, brace yourself, it's going to be tough for you to get through. So I wasn't super surprised.
And I remember a lot of people were trying to just play it off of like, oh, it was the 60s and, you know, it was a different time. And in a way that is okay or well, but in a way, no. Like, even if it is
that
the 60s,
that doesn't mean we don't get to
50s,
question it and examine why it's messed up.
Yeah, right. That's an explanation is not an excuse.
Ooh, that's good.
Like it.
And also, like, some of it is just a product of the time, but some of it, like, even when my mom was watching the episodes when they first aired, some of that was considered, like, really? They would do that? You know, even back in the 60s. There are other episodes that are very, very forward-thinking, but not all of them. It's, you know, just an important thought to put out there.
And, you know, continue. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I knew it was there. I didn't realize how bad some of it would be. Especially because all you ever really hear about is, at least within a Star Trek fan community, is, for the most part, praise for TOS as a whole. Yeah, it's how progressive it is, how forward-thinking it was. And then you watch it individually, and no. Like, some of it is really not. And maybe it's forward-thinking for humanity or for...
technology.
Like, technology, but it's not for gender and race relations. At least, I mean, I know there's the interracial kiss coming up. I hope that wasn't a spoiler. But it's just, you know, it's, I think I said it in a comment at some point, it's like one step forward, two steps back with a lot of things. They'll say one line that I'm like, oh yes, that's great. And then the very next scene, they'll undo everything they did and just make me angry.
Yeah, I feel that way too. What's been interesting to me is because I live tweet it and people participate in my live tweets, I often get people giving me their opinions while I'm watching it. What surprised me is how most Star Trek fans seem to be on the same page with this as a flaw. But every once in a while, I'll get tweets that are like, just chill out about it. It was a different time. I did have one guy who was like, told me that TOS was a man's world. And I was like, oh, thanks for that. Good.
So you're implying that the future and all possible military and space exploration is a man's world also?
Not sure. I did not respond. I just blocked.
Good grief.
I think it's a matter of mispronunciation. I think what he meant to say is that it was filmed on Amon's world. I think is really what he meant.
Yes, where Amon is our leader in all ways. I like that plan.
I'm going to pretend that's what it was.
Well, and in the 70s, Gene Roddenberry obviously would do conventions and different interviews, and even he recognized and admitted, I guess, one way to say, is that individual episodes will be flawed, but that he was trying to do something, you know, with the overall series. But a thing that kind of was mentioned in that same thought, but kind of separate, but it kind of struck me, is that he was saying at the time he was having to compete with like Bonanza, Gomer Pyle, and other TV shows of the time. So that doesn't excuse, like you said, it doesn't excuse some of the sexism and just the like flawed thinking of, you know, the male female thing going. But at the same time, you're not, like you said, one step forward, two steps back. That one step where they make a good statement, you wouldn't really get that from Gomer Pyle or Bonanza. So it's kind of like at times, like, you gotta just take the little nuggets, but then it's just sad that when they, you know, go in the far in the other direction and do something just really bad, like, you know, McCoy slapping a pregnant woman, it's like you just think, oh, just don't do that. But at the same time, at least it's, you know, bringing up thought, it's thought-provoking discussion, much more than something that's just going to be like a silly monster of the week, where it's like people go, oh, okay, that happened, and then move on and not think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that the network wanted Roddenberry to change things from the original pilot. They couldn't handle, you know, number one, a woman on the bridge, and they took away the pants, you know, very early on. But it's all, and we know from interviews that Roddenberry wanted to show a lot of change and wanted to be very progressive. But we also know it's no secret that Gene Roddenberry was kind of a womanizer. So you never know where something started, you know.
So we've got to take our feminism from Star Trek with a grain of salt, really.
Right. But like, is this thing that's annoying all of us, is that the networks that pushed it in there? Is it Gene Roddenberry that put it in there? Is it the writers that put it in there? Like, why something exists in an episode? There's no way for us at this point to know where that came from. Because who knew that people would still be talking about these episodes nearly 50 years later?
And think of the collaborative effort that went into a lot of these episodes. We really can't be sure where it came from or who did what, honestly.
Well, yeah.
Like Shakespeare, man.
Like, I mean, even now with television, that's still a problem. Like, it's really hard to tell who's responsible for what unless you were actually there. Like, I was listening to an interview with the guy who's credited as having written the episode of Deep Space Nine, Starship Down, and he's got the teleplay credit. Like, that is supposed to mean he wrote the script, but his, like, only, like, two lines of his script are actually in the episode. And then he has another episode that he's just credited as having the story, but almost his entire script made it into there. So, you know, it's just hard to tell.
And the other thing is, too, is a larger problem in, actually, I would say, most of geek culture is because we as geeks love things so completely, and we will fight to defend them. I see a lot of issues where people get very defensive about any critique of what they love. And
that's a big problem we have in kind of geek culture, the idea that that you stop caring about something once you start criticizing it, and that when you are thinking critically about something, you're negating it.
Right.
Like,
and
that,
especially when we're talking about stuff like the original series that is so classic and what did lay a lot of foundations for modern sci-fi, when we start critiquing, you know, what was actually wrong with it, people can get very defensive, and that can turn into another layer of misogyny, really.
I just feel like if we are going to continue to point to TOS as a science fiction classic and as a groundbreaking TV show, their need, especially for, you know, a new generation of people coming into science fiction as, you know, the community continues to grow, there need to be people out there saying, yes, it was at the time, but there are problems with it, and we need to recognize those problems and make sure they don't continue. And there are some people who cannot handle the idea that something they love has problems, and they take that like a personal attack, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
It is not something that belongs purely to you and is, you know, like your identity based on one single thing.
Besides that, I mean, you have to be able to separate problematic things with good art. I would say Star Trek is, for the most part, when it was on its game, good art. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't have problematic elements. And this is true of a lot of things that we love, right? I mean, classic movies and classic video games and even current video games and current movies can be great art and still have problematic elements. You have to be able to filter that. I mean, The Breakfast Club is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I rewatch it, and sometimes I cringe because there are a lot of problems with that movie, but I can still love it. Right.
Well, and I've seen, it's weird, because, you know, what you're saying is 100%, you know, true. But the weird thing to me is that I see the different, like it's a double standard, or it's just the weird difference of it, where I'll see the nerds pick apart, plot holes and the techno science, you know, issues. and be fine with that. But then once you bring up the sexism or the racism or issues like that, then they get upset. It's like, well,
you can't pick and choose what's worth critiquing.
Right. It's like, if you're going to,
it's a can of worms.
If you're going to get under the microscope and, you know, fine tooth comb about one aspect of it, don't get upset if, you know, if you take a more serious approach and think, what is this really saying about society, about, you know, people, gender, everything. But, oh, but it's fine to just, you know, pick apart plot holes. It's like, it's just weird the way some people make that difference or distinction between the two.
Hey, I can't imagine a modern example in which someone was attacked for wanting to critically examine a piece of media that nerds really like. I might be talking about Anita Sarkeesian. I might be. I might not be. Who knows? Now,
ambiguity!
That's my shield on everything, is that I just make everything I say extremely unclear, and then no one can pin me down on anything. But, so you guys have been talking, you know, a lot about some, like, how it's, on the one hand, you can watch Star Trek and try to take the good out of it, but there's also, like, it's undermined by this really, like, cringeworthy stuff. And one episode that is really like that for me, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about it, is the episode of Who Mourns for Adonai? Because on the one hand,
I hated that one.
You hated it?
Adonai or Adonis?
Isn't it Adonai?
It's Adonai.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, we established that it's Adonai, which I believe is the Hebrew
word. Yeah, that's the name of God. Our word for God.
Right, and so, like, because they couldn't make the title Who Mourns for God, so they snuck it in there, is what I think that was the implication for that was. So Andy, you said you just really did not like it. I would love to hear why.
Well, just in general, I thought it was a fairly boring episode. I don't feel like the sci-fi really held up that well, but I didn't like the female character they had there. First of all, she falls into the same trap that a lot of their one-off female characters do, which is she falls for the villain, or at least is sympathetic to the villain, which is really an annoying trope that I would love if they stopped. And then just in general, his the way he treated her like a pet, and he obviously has that kind of view of humanity as general, but they used a female Starfleet member to really have him drive that theme home, and the whole thing was gross.
Well, this kind of goes back to another feeling that I've had with a lot of, you know, stuff in general, but especially TOS. It had an interesting concept, but the execution of it was flawed and not done very well, because in an overview, it's kind of interesting to think, okay, here are these, you know, Greek and Roman gods, Zeus, Apollo, and Thor, all these. And it's like, and even other, you know, gods of other religions. But it's like, okay, if you're the god, normally we think of it from a, like, the human, regular human perspective of, like, worshiping the superior thing. And from their perspective, it's like, well, okay, they need or they want the worshipers that gives them their power. So what happens when nobody cares about you no more? It's like you lose all your, you know, mojo or juice, whatever you want to call it, because nobody's worshiping you no more. That's kind of an interesting concept, but then it gets to the execution in the episode, and then it's like, you know, there's all those, like you said, the flaws about the characterization of it, and I don't know, it's just, I didn't like it either. And it, to me, like you said, it's not even, in a way, it doesn't even really feel like sci-fi. It's, I don't even know if you'd call it fantasy, but it was just an interesting, weird take on that episode.
The tropes that are in it are not, or have become basic sci-fi fantasy tropes. You know, the ancient gods were really aliens that visited Earth a long time ago. That's what Stargate was. The gods get their power from the belief of the people who care about them is used in the Discworld series by Terry Pratchett. And this, though, is the episode where the guys on the bridge say, well, she's only in Starfleet until she finds the right man and settles down. And what really got me was that they spend, like, the whole, what, first 5-10 minutes of this episode talking about her relationship with Scotty and why she likes him and why he likes her. I'm like, what is this? Are we in high school? And also, who cares? It's none of your business.
Well, apparently when it comes to women, we are worth as much as our relationships. And also, you have to wonder when you see that on a show like Star Trek, how often does a woman in the real world, in her given line of profession, have someone say she's only in this until she gets a guy, and then she's probably just going to do the housefrau thing.
I've had it happen to
you
me.
You have to wonder.
So.
Well, now we know it's real. We know it's a thing and not a theoretical thing that only exists in science fiction.
Well, I work in infrastructure, which is a super male-dominated field.
Oh, I'd imagine.
I've been asked if I slept with my CEO to get my job.
Yikes.
There you go.
I'm sure that was a lot of fun.
By a client.
Oh, wow.
I just usually, the sexism I get in my job is more how I don't feel like you can know that much about asphalt because you're a woman. I mean, how much can women really
asphalt
understand about concrete?
Really.
Yeah, exactly. I had a guy who explained to me that sidewalk was cut in squares. And I was like, really?
You don't say.
Is it?
Really?
Is that how sidewalk works?
Yeah, I mean, I was super surprised. And then he explained to me why. And I was like, thanks for letting me know. I only, you know, work with sidewalks every single day. Mansplaining.
A plus mansplaining.
Yeah.
Yay!
See, I was born knowing everything about this stuff, but I've forgotten all of it. So you're going to have to walk me through a little bit. Like, you know, I used to know everything there was just out of the womb. Asphalt. Boom. I know all of it. But not anymore. You know, I've just forgotten. It's just, you know,
My favorite mansplaining ever came from... So I used to live in the Middle East for about 2 years, and I have this really cool little, I don't really know how to explain it, but it's a piece of art, tiny little piece of art that I have on my wall, and it has one of the names of God in Arabic on it. And my roommate's boyfriend came home and was in my room kind of just chatting with me at one point, and he looks at it and he goes, oh, do you know what that says? And I was like, yes. And he then proceeded to explain to me that it said Bismillah al-Rahman al-Rahim on it. And I was like, no, it doesn't. He goes, yes, it does. And then he explained to me, you know, the history of this piece of art that I had on my own wall.
Well, like, that's just delightful, isn't it?
And I just let him go on and on and on. And I was like, oh, thanks for letting me know. And then he left. And my roommate told me later that he was telling her about it. She was like, you know, she speaks Arabic and lived in the Middle East for years, right? And he was like, what?
So this happened at university, right? Like you
no.
Just
No, this was only a couple years ago.
I was kind of wondering if maybe he was studying to get his degree in explaining other people's decorations to them. I'm pretty sure they offer that at Evergreen, where I went there.
Yeah, they offer a degree in interior jackassery.
I just thought it was amazing, explaining your own art to you.
Now, see, fabulous. The reason I originally brought up Who Mourns for Adonai was that I thought that the whole lesson, you're right, is that the idea of the, you know, the chariot of the gods thing, where it's like the gods were actually aliens, like that trope has been done a lot since then, and had been done a little bit before then, even. They did not originate that idea. But I really liked the concept of, you know, humanity not needing gods. I thought that was a really good concept, and it had a really cool thing they were doing in the episode, but it's, you know, it's dragged down by the way that they treat Lieutenant Palamus, I think is her name, Lieutenant Palamus, but, you know, the Carolyn, they generally refer to her as. And it's one of those things where when you watch it, it's hard to separate, but it's also unclear to me how much we should separate it. Like, is it worth being like, let's acknowledge the sexism is there and then try to focus on the positive? Or is that just whitewashing it? Are we being complicit if we do that?
Tricky.
You can tell that I probably went on that tangent longer than I should have. Now, we've been having a fairly heavy conversation here as this goes. Was there any of these episodes that you guys watched that just were like just kind of fun to watch that didn't make you want to go like, ah, this is not happy?
Ones that you could actually enjoy for the camp and silliness appeal.
Guilt-free
episodes, if you will.
I enjoyed Cat's Paw
as
a silly
cat
episode. But that one does have problems with it anyway, but I mean, not so many that it was horrifying, and just was ludicrously silly. Especially the beginning, when they don't really know what's going on. They're like wandering into this world with, I don't know, spooky masks and like a very obviously bad Halloween episode. I enjoyed that.
I enjoyed Mirror Mirror because I enjoy the Mirror Universe, but that's not to say that there are not even more issues in that universe. Like, they go into the mirror universe of even more misogyny. But
yeah, and actually when I was tweeting that, I was like, I guess it makes more sense that they are more sexist in the evil society, because the evil society was based solely on power. And obviously it's a world where women have even less power.
Right. But like, I feel like the goofy stuff is stuff that, Andy, you may not have gotten to yet. I think, of course, right away of Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh yeah, I'm only a couple episodes away from that.
Everybody which I loves love. Tribbles.
And I actually really enjoyed a piece of the action.
Oh yeah, Gangster Planet. That one's good too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mostly Shatner's gangster voice. I just could not get enough of.
Yeah, I would say my favorite episode so far has been, like, not silly episode, just in general, has been Mirror Mirror. Oh, no, Arena. Was really good.
That's
really
good.
Like that one.
Speaking of Arena, I actually have that on the section of the show. No, we're coming up on the end of the hour. I want to, just because, to ensure that, you know, this conversation we've been having has been very important. I'm really glad that both of you came on to have it with us, because that is something that needs to be said. But so that we don't leave everyone feeling completely depressed and that everything is terrible, I wanted to do a round of Star Trek TOS-related trivia.
Da 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 da!
I am, as is my wont, as the originating host, I am dividing you into two teams. The home team, which will be composed of Grace and David. I will not be on it because I have made the questions, and that would be kind of unfair. And the away team, which has a special meaning for Star Trek, will be Andy and Sue.
We're going to die, basically.
Yeah.
No, you guys got this. I have faith in my guests to defeat my co-hosts. I don't know if that's the faith I should be having, but...
Not really.
The format of this is simple. I will ask a question, and then whichever team buzzes in first, and they will buzz in by saying TOS, as in TOS, but, you know, pronounced, and they will get a chance to answer it. If they answer incorrectly, then it will go to the other team. And then after each question, there will be a bonus, because each question is worth 2 points, each bonus is worth 1 point. And then at the end, there will be a special round for even extra points. You guys ready to go?
Yes, so but I'm points. Scared.
It will be good. Okay. So, and again, just for anyone listening, these are not like really like super obscure detailed questions, because that's boring. Hopefully these are questions that everyone will have fun trying to answer. First one is, what character not named James T. Kirk did William Shatner portray in the first season of Star Trek?
Us.
Yes?
His brother, William?
William is not his name, but I will accept it as Kirk's brother. The character's name was George Samuel Kirk, or
I knew
Sam.
It was some sort of really common name. That's why I went with William.
Yeah.
Now, to bonus point to the home team, since the away team answered that question, can David or Grace, can either of you tell me what other Star Trek production was George Samuel Kirk supposed to appear in, and kind of still does?
Ooh.
You know what
he was in
this?
The 2011 Star Trek reboot. He's the kid walking down the road.
Technically, it's the Star Trek 9, 2009 Star Trek reboot, but I will accept the answer.
Yes!
They actually changed the name in the credits to I think it's been changed to like Jonathan or something. He's supposed to be Kirk's friend, but he was originally supposed to be George. They shot some scenes with him as George, and then they deleted that stuff. All right, the away team has two coming out of the first round. Second question: as of the first season, what is the only crime that can still gain the death penalty in the Federation?
Us.
Yes, Andy.
Treason.
Incorrect. That is, treason, I don't know if that comes up in the first season, but there's a very specific crime that they mentioned. It's the only thing that you can still get the death penalty for. David or Grace, do you have a chance to steal?
Toss.
Can't figure it out. I don't remember.
Yes, Grace?
Wearing lamé after Labor Day.
That's not the correct answer, but I'm giving you a point for it anyway.
What?
Yes!
Now, since I let Grace cheat with that, I will give the bonus. The answer to that, by the way, was going to Talos 4, or violating General Order 7, as Spock attempted to do in the Menagerie.
Right.
That's a dumb reason for death.
It really is.
Apparently it'll get you on the Green Mile, though.
So, and also, you'll find out in Season 3 that there is something else that can get you the death penalty, but as of Season 1, that's the only thing, is going to Talos IV. And anyone who doesn't remember, The Menagerie is the clip show episode where they use clips from the original pilot with the Talosians and putting, you know, Pike in the cage and what have you. So everyone remembers that episode, right? Because the bonus question is related to that episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
I will blink right. Twice for yes.
So I'm going to give this one specifically to the away team, since I let Grace cheat on that answer. But for a bonus point, can you tell me why it is that humans are not supposed to go there?
Because
they've
it
made
sucks.
An agreement with the Talosians, because yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because,
both good
well,
answers.
Greedy.
They made an agreement to not go there.
I mean, that would make sense.
They said so.
See, you guys, you can clearly see that you guys are thinking way too logically for this episode, because the actual answer is that supposedly if humans hang out with the Talosians, they will gain the Talosians' telepathic abilities and then waste away and become, you know, like them, you know, just sitting around in the ground.
The crap?
Did they actually say that?
They totally did.
I missed it entirely.
That's the supposed reason why you're not supposed to go to Talos IV, is because, you know, because that would be bad.
I'm realizing we're going to have to do a second time trek at some point, so I can actually remember
things you
details
the
like
second
this.
Time around.
Yes.
Toss right. me some TNG softballs.
Well, we'll get maybe when Andy gets to or wait, no, Andy's already done TNG.
I have. Uh-huh.
Well, I'll get you guys both back. We'll do TNG trivia. I don't have any TNG questions at this point, but
that's
when,
okay.
You know, but we'll come back to it. So,
I can recite you Ode to Spot if you want. Just FYI.
Good lord.
Felis catus is your taxonomic nomenclature, an endothermic quadruped carnivorous in nature.
In nature.
Oh
your
God.
Visual, poetry. Olfactory, and auditory senses contribute to your hunting skills and natural defenses.
This is
I
the
love
best Ode to
Spot.
That is a bonus point right there.
Yay!
Your tail is quite essential for your acrobatic talents. You would not be so agile if you lacked its counterbalance.
And when
no,
not
it
being
is not
utilized...
up on my screen. This is in my brain.
Let me see if I can remember. And when not being utilized in locomotion, it also serves to illustrate the state of your emotion. That's
very
a good
nice.
Poem, man.
Yeah.
It is. It's
it rhymes and everything.
So next time, you know, we'll ask you guys to sculpt music, and you know, we'll see how that works out.
Sorry, I totally derailed you.
No,
that was the best.
That was a good derailing.
I'm glad that I'm not the only one who knows Ode to Spot by heart.
We should all know that poem by heart. So the third question is from the episode Errand of Mercy, which, for anyone who doesn't remember, that is the one where they have that community of farmers that the Klingons have conquered and are trying to occupy, and then it turned out that the farmers
the sperm
were actually...
flowers?
Hmm? No, that's a different one.
No, yeah. These were the ones that turned out...
No, this
out
they... was... Yeah.
They were actually, like, super beings, and they were just pretending to be farmers. And
balls
they...
of light.
Yeah, and
like
they,
jerks.
Like, stopped the war between the Federation...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that one. So... The question is, when Kirk and Spock were trapped down on Organia, who was it who they left in command of the Enterprise, who then took the ship into battle with the Klingons?
Toss.
Yes?
Scotty?
Incorrect, although
what?
You would be correct most Ooh. Of the time.
I think I know, actually, so if they don't get it, I think I can get it.
Well, let's give
David
it to,
on a...
let's give it to the home team, and then we'll see if they can get it. Home team?
Sulu.
Correct. It was Sulu.
Yay!
Which I like to think of as foreshadowing for when Sulu finally got his own ship in Star Trek VI.
It was on the job training.
I'm sorry I failed you.
No, it's cool. You know Ode to Spot. You can do whatever you want.
All right.
That's
now,
your get out of jail free card.
So noted.
All right. So, and for the bonus point of this question, to whoever buzzes in first, who is normally left in charge of the Enterprise when Kirk and Spock are gone?
I believe I already answered this question.
Toss.
Did you?
DeSal?
She didn't say toss.
No, that's true. She didn't, but I'll give it to her anyway. What was it? What is it? Who is it, Sue?
It's Scotty.
That is
Scotty,
correct.
Scotty,
is...
Scotty. And
why?
Then DeSalle is twice, right? Well, twice since I've been watching. DeSalle, LaSalle.
But he was in the army, and he's totally awesome.
He's Scottish, man.
Like the real army.
He knows.
Yeah,
he's
you know,
seen things.
I've always liked to imagine, you know how they have that trope where, like, there's a story about, like, where the actor will meet the character they're playing or what have you, and then they'll, like, feel bad and they'll feel inadequate? I'd like to think that if James Doohan ever met Scotty, they would be, like, on equal terms, because James Doohan was such a badass.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's a freaking war hero, dude.
They'd be bro-ing it up.
But it does beg the question of why they bring the chief engineer onto the bridge. You think they would want him in engineering?
Because he looks damn good on the bridge. He leans back. He has that air of command. Only one who sits in that chair more arrogantly is Kirk.
Well, that's because he's Kirk, so.
I'm pretty sure that there's no one who can sit more arrogantly than Kirk, even Riker.
Damn.
I know.
A shot-by-shot comparison. But
yeah.
speaking of Kirk, for our fourth question, in the episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of?, which is the one where they find the robots being built by Dr. Roger Corby. Everyone
that
remember
woman
that
wears scarves as an outfit?
Yeah. Scarfy boobs.
Scarves were in vogue that season, and it was just sort of the thing. So in the episode, What Are Little Girls Made Of?, what behavior did Kirk program into his robot double to give it away that it was not actually him?
Toss?
Yes, Grace?
A twitch?
Nope, it was not a twitch. It was a little more blatant than that.
Oh, Toss!
Yes?
He was mean to Spock.
Correct. He programmed using his... He was like, when he was being copied, he like thought of a bunch of like really mean like racial slurs to say to Spock to get him, you know, to give away that it was not actually him.
You know,
dude, I'm not
a robot
racist. Some
McCoy,
of my best friends are Vulcan.
If it had been a robot of McCoy, that whole plan wouldn't have worked.
It's true. This would have been like, McCoy, you're just talking normal. So so for the bonus point, available to both teams having to do with Spock, before the term Vulcan was settled on, what other name did they use for Spock's race?
Toss.
Oh,
I said it first.
It's a toss.
No, I think I said it first.
I'm going to have to give this to Sue. What is it?
Vulcanian.
That is correct. Plus 1 point.
No.
I'm not pulling my weight in this.
It
you're gonna look pretty.
Mr. Vulcan?
Oh, wait, I know, because it annoyed me a lot.
Yeah.
Look, Andy, anyone who knows as much of the Ode to Spot poem as you do is automatically pulling their weight.
See, this I told you, Ode to Spot is your get-out-of-jail-free card for everyone.
All right.
Hooray!
So question number 5. Kirk is famous for the Corbomite maneuver, which is also the name of an episode. For anyone who doesn't recall, it is the maneuver in which he told the guy who was attacking his ship, whose name I've forgotten for no reason, but was basically saying, hey, my ship's made full of this stuff called Corbonite, and when it blows up, it will blow up super big, and you will also get destroyed. Everyone remember the Corbomite maneuver?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
All right. So, he's famous for it. What was the second time he used it? And I will accept, like, episode name or just describing the situation.
Poop.
I think I've gone a little bit too obscure with this one. David, did you have it?
Nope, I said I'm out. I have no idea.
Toss!
Yes, Grace?
He used this excuse in the bedroom.
Ah!
I win!
He probably has, but that is not the correct answer. Away team, do you have any idea when the second time Kirk used the Corbomite maneuver? I'll give you a hint. It is in an episode that Andy has seen very recently.
Oh, shit.
I've learned that I'm really the only one who cares about the Corbomite maneuver here. I'm just watching and be like, oh man, it was the Corbomite maneuver again. I gotta put that in the trivia questions. Everyone loved that. And everyone's like, Orin.
Everyone loves the Corbomite maneuver, just not everyone can remember it.
Like, Orin, the hell are you talking about?
Wait, who's allowed to answer right now?
Right now,
you guys.
The away team.
Was it Toss potentially Journey to Babel?
It was not. I will go ahead and reveal it. It was in the episode The Deadly Years. And it was when Commodore Stalker, I think was his name, Stoker, he had taken the Enterprise into Romulan space because he's really, really smart. And
Yeah, that's right. And Kirk tricks them into thinking that if they attack the ship, it'll all blow up. Ah,
yeah.
I knew that. I just
classic Kirk
didn't know that.
See, this is just I focus on the wrong part of the episode sometimes. But for a bonus point to either team, whoever buzzes in first, who was the only member of the crew who was exposed to the aging disease that was not affected by it?
Toss.
Go ahead. I'll give it. I'll have Andy do this one because Sue, you've been answering a lot of questions.
Chekhov.
Boom. Chekhov. Done.
This is awful because he knows I fell asleep watching that episode last night.
I was watching. I know many things.
I fell asleep!
So, at the moment, the away team has a very comfortable lead of 8-4. However, there is one final bonus round, and the winner of this will be awarded 5 points.
Just doing this for the drama.
5 points for one question?
Well, this is a special bonus round.
He's played a lot of Quidditch. He knows how this works.
It's all about
this Dumbledore. Is the snitch, is what you're saying.
The golden snitch of Star Trek. The golden comm badge, I think maybe we'll call it.
Yeah, let's go with that.
So, instead of being a question, I want both teams to answer to do this for me. This is a thought exercise. I want you to describe what would happen if you beamed down to the Shoreleaf planet. Do you recall the Shoreleaf? The one with the, this is the one with the, where your everything, your mind, you know, comes to life and such. So I want you to give your personal account of, like, what would happen when you beamed down there. What would the Shoreleaf planet bring out of your mind and, you know, attack you with? So Grace, you grabbed it first. Would you and David care to give the first go?
Sure. David, you want to go first?
Well, there's so many directions that but I won't say on the radio, but keeping with, you know, in character, I would beam down and then all of a sudden I would have a whole bunch of enemies to fight with my Batleth, and I would be able to, you know, fight the Batleth, and I would not get hit. I would be able to defeat all the enemies, but then I would get overrun, and it would just be a glorious battle, like, overrunning the bad guys.
All right, Grace, what do you think?
I got three words for you. Fondue hot tub.
Wait, I forgot I would have, like, a couple barrels of blood wine that would, you know, just help the process.
Well, of course. No event would be complete without them. So we've got Grace in her fondue hot tub. We've got David having his glorious battle. Now, Andy and Sue, what glories does the Shoreleaf planet hold for you?
I would just have two Rikers. I would just have a Riker witch.
Would they just be hitting on each other the whole time?
No, that's not what they would be doing.
No, okay, hold on. Let's paint the picture. Are they both beard, or is it one beard, one
of
without?
Of course. Riker with no beard is no Riker at all.
Is it Will and Tom? Or
no,
is it both
it's
Will?
Two Rikers. Two Rikers.
Well, they are two Rikers.
I know, but I'm talking our Riker. Real
from,
Riker.
From the
not
same
fake
era?
Transporter is, clone Riker.
Yes.
Is it like TNG tunic with, and then the other one is the first contact uniform, or is it specific like that?
How about, let's say, season 6 Riker?
All right. Sue, what are you thinking?
I think we'd finally get our Doctor Who crossover.
Ooh.
Specifically including one Captain Jack Harkness.
Ooh.
Oh dear. This is getting a bit steamy. All right.
Sweet Jesus, yes.
So I think, although both teams described a very amazing and interesting sequence, I have to give this to the away team for Doctor Who crossover double Riker action. So I will award them
what?
5 extra points.
Sounds like a fanfic.
I'm sure it's a fanfic. So thank you to both teams for participating. You both did very well. The away team is taking away the prize of being best at All Things Trek Trivia this week. In the future, we will no doubt have to have both of you back, and perhaps we will do some TNG-related questions. Although I already know that you know everything about Spot now, so I'm going to have to write those questions out of it.
I really do.
She changes gender.
It's true.
Yeah.
It does.
See? Non-gender binary. Yeah. Star Trek. Non-gender binary.
Hallelujah.
I think they had,
not
like,
even
five...
the cats can be binary.
I think they had, like, 5 different cats playing Spot in total, like, over the course of the series. Now, before we wrap up, I want Andy and Sue, I would like you to remind everyone where they can find you on the internets.
You can find me on Twitter at First Time Trek. I'm currently watching the original series, so I've got a nice big handsome picture of Kirk on there, and that's the best place to find me.
You can find most of my stuff over at anomalypodcast.com, anomalypodcast.com. And anything I don't specifically do for Anomaly will be linked from there at some point or another.
Excellent. Thank you both for coming on the show. It was great to have you. We had a very important conversation, and then we did some trivia. So, you know, I think that was all in all. I will call that a good show. I hope you will all join us next week. I don't know what we're going to be talking about, but I'm sure I'll think of something, or perhaps Grace will think of something.
Probably.
Grace has given us some of our best topics. And until then, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.